On the UFO landing pad tonight, things are the same the world over. And in Japan, UFO researchers also have to deal with UFO videos that look too good to be true. One Japanese researcher in particular is spending a good deal of time and effort examining UFO videos. His name is Junichi Takanashi, and he's the chairman of the Japan UFO Society. In his last newsletter, Takanashi told the tale of the Fundaki UFO video. From about dawn to 7:30 a.m. in November of 1991, a bright UFO had been appearing daily over Fugen Mountain in the Kyushu district of Japan. Always, it was seen in approximately the same position. A Mr. Mitsunori Shindo taped the UFO, footage which eventually aired on Nippon Television. Shindo's video showed an oval-shaped craft navigating through the clouds from left to right. Takanashi was initially very impressed, but became suspicious because the reported UFO appeared in the exact same position, approximately the same spot every day. And then it would fade from view. Takanashi, from his own knowledge, felt it had to be a planetary body of some sort, particularly Venus. Sure enough, on closer inspection, the great UFO video didn't show a UFO moving smoothly through the clouds. The clouds themselves were actually moving from right to left, and the object was standing still by the clouds. The enlarged image of the UFO, which appeared as a clear oval, was also a video trick. As Takanashi explains it, when a tiny image of Venus or any other image of a distant bright light source is zoomed up, it not only takes on the blurred image of an oval shape, but also, somehow, shadow-like dark areas appear on it. The crescent-shaped moon in the same frames also showed shadow-like dark areas. So the reputable UFO researchers in Japan were able to dismiss this video as a misinterpretation of Venus in the early morning hours. While disappointing, it's a definite plus for researchers to impartially separate the video wheat from the chaff. We know most UFO videos end up being the chaff, but we all know the wheat is out there. It just continues to be very hard to get a decent UFO video on the UFO landing pad. The UFO landing pad is brought to you by the best UFO publication in the known universe, UFO Magazine. Jean-Jacques Rousseau said, "The world of reality has its limits. The world of imagination is bound. Not being able to enlarge the one, let us contract the other, for it is from their difference that all the evils arise which render us unhappy." I'm Vicki Cooper. Now back to Don and his guest Vito Sicari on UFOs Tonight.
We're back, and we're back with my special guest tonight, Mr. Vito Sicari. Vito, that had to be literally one of those experiences like recalling where you were when President Kennedy was killed.
Yeah, it's a once-in-a-lifetime event. I mean, in the end, we felt very privileged that we had gotten as far as we got, and to see what we had seen, and all the rest of it that came after.
So what you're basically implying, mm-hmm. without saying so, mm-hmm. is that any of the Apollo astronauts would have had to have been privy to seeing these same things with their eyes.
Exactly. They would have had to be blind. And that's what led to the next phase of this investigation. Because after the third day, when we had that, we went down to the last hour, 45 minutes. I left the room just to stretch my legs. I had seen pretty much enough. And when I had gone out back into the main room, I noticed that another wall had been open on the other side. This was another door. And I looked in and just peeked inside. They had these bookcases, floor to ceiling. It was a small room, but they had bookcases in there with three ring binders. Notebooks, three ring binder notebooks. They were white, okay? And I had asked the librarian, you know, what is that? And he told me that was the result of the, those were the records of the experiments. He went on to say that, you know, NASA was conducting all kinds of experiments, They periodically update the files and the records and all that sort of stuff. And that's all the scientific data. It's every experiment they had ever run or were running and that sort of thing. And in addition, some of the three-ring binders contained the transcripts. And I asked them what the transcript was. And apparently, every time they ever had a conversation with any of these fellows up there, it was all being...
You mean the astronauts?
The astronauts, yes. It was all being taped, audio taped. And then eventually transferred into a written form, in the form of what they call transcripts.
Right.
He knew I wanted... he sort of knew I wanted to take a look.
Well, let me ask you this before you go any further. Did
sure.
you show him Leonard's book?
Yes, we did. He saw some of the photos with us. And he was himself amazed. This guy is, you know, the librarians have worked so much. They spend all their time filing, retrieving, updating files, that sort of thing. They never have time to sit down and look at any of this stuff.
And this guy was completely ignorant of this?
I'm sorry?
He was ignorant of what was in these photographs?
That's right. He's got, you know, behind him somewhere is...
Do you realize how hard to believe that is?
You know how many photos he's got back there?
Well, probably millions.
Yeah, and I don't know if he ever has the time to look at any of them.
Well, wait a minute. Let's speculate for just a second.
Okay.
Now, if, in fact,
mm-hmm.
what we're talking about
mm-hmm.
is an extraterrestrial presence
mm-hmm.
that has either in the past or is currently inhabiting the moon for whatever reason,
mm-hmm.
NASA, you would think, and our astronaut corps would have to be aware of it. I mean, this is a secret that just seems to be too big to hide. And
yep.
let's face it, we're talking about it tonight. But how is it possible in your mind that so many of these people working within the structure of NASA could be ignorant of these events? People are human. People talk.
That's right.
Something this tremendously spectacular, there would have to be people that would have an inkling.
Yeah, I agree. There has to be an upper, there's an echelon somewhere in there that actually does have a privy to the whole story, but most of the employees, I think, are not aware of the fact that this is filtered out before it comes to them.
Okay.
And what happened was, for example, when we got, he gave me a wink and a nod, okay? We officially had no clearance to see this, but he gave me the wink and a nod to go, I can go in there. Les was still with the photos in the other room. And I spent most of the remaining time just flipping through the scientific data, the scientific experiments. As an engineer, that's what I was primarily interested in. I was not too interested in any of the transcripts because, I guess, like everybody else in the country, you know, I had seen the moon shot and the moon landing and all that sort of stuff, you know what I mean? So the transcripts were really not of any interest to me. So most of my time was with the experimental data. However, down in the last 10, 15 minutes, I did pick up one of these transcript books, and I just was flipping through the pages very casually. I wasn't analyzing it. I didn't even know which mission it was from. And eventually, I came across a page that slipped down, and my eyes caught this sentence, and I had to turn back a few pages to get back to it to make sure I read it right. But there it was, and it says... you know, Houston, we got a bogey at 2:00. And Houston is responding, saying, okay, roger that, you know, switch to alpha, roll 8 degrees, start your sequence, that sort of thing. And what the dialogue continues, and what they were looking to do is position the command module to line this thing up with this bogey so that they can get it in the middle of their window and start taking a movie film of it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Movie pictures of it.
Sure.
And then I started rifling through the others, and I picked up the same kind of dialogue going on. We've got Santa Claus coming over the hill, and that sort of thing. And okay, Houston says, well, hold your fix. We're going to switch to the Bravo link, and that sort of thing. We'll catch him on the next pass. And you know, there's all kinds of dialogue going on.
Okay, now
and I know what this meant to me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
These guys are talking about UFO activity.
Now, you mentioned an Alpha and a Bravo link.
Alpha and Bravo, right. And I could not understand, I didn't understand what any of it, I mean, I knew what part of it meant, okay? But I had a big mystery on my hands now, because I had never heard any of this stuff come through the live broadcast. When we had the Apollo missions out there, And when this was being broadcast directly to all of us in 1969 and 1970, following,
mm-hmm.
I don't remember any of this conversation. But I knew what I was reading. And I decided, my instincts kicked in and said, just put it away, don't even mention it, keep quiet, and leave.
Did you talk about it with your friend Lester?
No, I never told Lester yet. And I didn't tell Roger either, because we didn't have any, we didn't have no clearance for this, and I got to tell you, I was starting to get a little scared now.
Scared of what, Vito?
I don't know. Crazy things go through your mind when you get to that, when something actually falls in your hands, and the whole thing actually comes together, and you realize this is for real now, you know what I mean? Just crazy things start going through your head. You know, I'll be honest with you. I promise you, I'd be candid and honest, right?
Right.
You know what came through my head? I remembered Dorothy Kilgallen.
Uh-huh.
Many of your audience may not.
I remember it.
Yeah, she was a journalist, very famous, as famous in her day as Walter Cronkite later became, right?
Right.
And I remember she was the only journalist who had ever gotten through and had the interview with Jack Ruby while he was in prison.
Right.
And came out and got on the phone and called her editor and said, boy, I'm going to crack this thing wide open tomorrow morning on the broadcast that she was dead the next night. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Before she ever got to make the broadcast. I remembered Ruby and Oswald, and those guys never made it to trial to tell their side of the story. Crazy things go through your head. You follow me?
So you were afraid that maybe you literally stepped into it.
I remembered the 100-and-some-odd eyeball witnesses who died within 12 of each other because they said the Warren Commission was wrong, the shot came from the ground.
And you know, if this
and
is...
just crazy things go through your head when you're... And I said, my God, look where the hell... I'm in a secret antechamber off to the left of a secret room at the end of a secret tunnel in the bottom of a secret building that doesn't even have an address in the middle of the woods that nobody can find down a dirt road that says no trespassing, right? I felt very vulnerable, and I was very frightened. That's all I can say. I'm willing to admit it. I was just scared. And
well,
I got the hell out of it.
That's understandable.
I left from there, and we thank you very much. I want to go. And I don't mind admitting it.
Well, that was 1979.
That was 1979. Now, when Lester came out, he asked... He didn't know anything about this now. He didn't know about the transcripts. But he asked the librarian if he could make arrangements to buy these photos that we had just seen. And to our surprise, he confided that there was an outlet in NASA that would let you have access to certain photos if you had the numbers. And it's in Maryland, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They gave us the forms. We left. I made arrangements with my company to purchase these photos for Lester. All right?
Right.
Ran about $2,000. They were $40 a piece. The ones he selected ran about $2,000. Sent the money in. Took 6 weeks for them to show up. By then, he was back in Venezuela, okay?
Uh-huh.
The photos came. They were full size. But the resolution was completely wiped out.
Yeah.
It looked like a print that had been made from a negative of a negative of a negative of a negative, and with each, you know, generation, you were losing resolution.
Well, let me say this, because we've got to go to a break. But a number of months ago, I had a former NASA employee on here by the name of Donna. I hope I don't butcher her name, Donna Tietze. And Donna walked in on a session where a photographic technician, and she mentioned this on the show.
Yeah.
Photographic technician was airbrushing an anomaly out of a photograph.
Yeah.
And he had showed her the photograph.
Mm-hmm.
And if I remember correctly how she stated it, she looked at this photograph and she said something to the effect of, is that a UFO? And the guy basically would not answer her.
Mm-hmm.
We airbrush these before we sell them to the public.
Right. I'm so, not surprised.
Vito, we got to take another quick break.
The late Professor Frank Halstead, who was, until his retirement, the curator of the University of Minnesota's Darling Observatory in Duluth, is our guest. And he has seen strange things on the moon, and I asked him if he hadn't seen something unusual.
You mean the road on the moon? Yes, I did. That didn't were first made by an amateur astronomer down in New Orleans. And he, the night he discovered it, he called the University of Tulane, got in touch with the astronomical department, and they also saw this black line in this crater. And then we at the observatory at Duluth,
at the University of Minnesota.
Yes, watched for it. And we, after several weeks, we found it one night. It was on a public opening night, and we let all the public in. And there was 15 or 16 people in the dome. My assistant called on me out in the lecture room, and he said, "We found the road." That's what they call the road on the moon.
Road on the moon.
And I rushed up there, and there it was. There wasn't any question about that. And all these people, all these 15 or 16 people, I think it was 16, saw this thing. Everybody took a look at it, so we had plenty of witnesses.
What size scope were you using on that?
At that time, we were using a 60 power eyepiece.
On what kind of a telescope?
Refractor telescope, 10 inch.
Uh-huh.
Very, very fine instrument. You could only see it at a certain time of the moon, see, when the sun was shining in this
light place, have to hit
at the correct angle.
Mm-hmm. Was this this so-called road a perfectly straight line?
So far as I could see, yes, it was straight.
How long would you say it was?
As I remember, it was quite a while ago when we saw that. I think it was about 12 miles long. We figured it was about 12 miles long, knowing the size of the crater.
Yeah, 12 miles long and perfectly straight.
Perfectly straight.
Does anything in nature ever occur perfectly straight for 12 miles?
Well, not as a rule, no. Nature doesn't make straight rivers or straight lines in mountains or anything like that.
And that was the late Dr. Frank Halstead. My name is Don Ecker. The show is UFOs Tonight, and we have the phone lines lit up. But before we go to the calls, I got to ask you one question, Vito.
Yeah.
You were down there in 1979.
That's correct.
When did you first start to publicly speak about these experiences?
1995.
This year?
This year, yeah.
And what was it that 16 years had passed? What was it that made you finally decide to go public with this?
Well, I spent from 79 on, I was just doing private investigation type, you know, looking into these things on my own. But in 95, the MUFON people came by and started a MUFON chapter, if you will, here in Houston. And someone had invited me to join. And I thought maybe it was time to, join the rest of the UFO community, you know what I mean?
Right.
Because in the last 16 years, an awful lot of other data has come out and come forward. And you know, maybe my stuff isn't so, you know,
Sensitive
as it might have been back in 79, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I did, and there was one particular woman at the meeting whose dad was part of a group in St. Louis who was in the process today of trying to track down the same pictures. And I told them about it, that, hey, we had done that in 79. So they put us together, and we chatted with this fellow and this and that, and the Houston branch of the MUFON group was starting up a newsletter, asked if I would mind, you know, writing up an article of my experience, that sort of thing, which I did, and then they published it in their small newsletter. Someone placed it on the internet, and it kind of went around the world a lot, and, things just led from one thing to the next from there.
Well, those folks at MUFON in Houston were conducting an investigation on this, trying to verify what you were...
That's right. They had asked, once it became a hot issue, they asked if they had completed the training course. It went through a very extensive training course. And they had asked if I had any objections if they conduct an investigation into the story, because it would give them something to investigate anyway. You follow me?
Yeah.
They're just getting started anyhow. They really didn't have any UFO sightings to go after. This would allow them to practice their techniques and that sort of thing. And I welcomed it. I said, yeah, this is great, you know, because I wanted the story verified. You know what I mean?
Right.
I didn't want to be just another fellow who had a story that couldn't be verified. So they went and started and conducted an in-depth investigation. They split up into like 8 or 9 different areas. Some started it with the Lunar Planetary Institute. Others were getting into NASA. Some were tracking down former NASA and LPI employees. Some had found the old building. Some were tracking down the old architectural plans to prove the tunnels, that sort of thing. And this was sort of an ongoing investigation
bit quiet.
Being very, well, you know, it's the only way you can do it is quiet.
Right.
Exactly. And it was, and I'm not at liberty really to let you know what they were finding out, because it's proprietary to the MUFON group in Houston. But I was very pleased with the progress.
Well, unfortunately, and though, somebody jumped the gun on this, didn't they?
Prematurely, yeah. The newsletter came out announcing the investigation and gave them a preliminary result of the findings, and then went ahead and actually listed the names of all of the investigators.
Which tipped, I would think,
it
NASA.
It tips off the opposition.
So basically, they scuttled their own investigation.
Well, I don't. The MUFON people did not do it. The Houston Sky people. Which actually, it's the same. One of the individuals is the same, but the editor of Houston Sky, I feel, was premature in releasing this information, and I don't think it was done to sabotage anything. I don't think it was done to deliberately hurt anything. But the journalistic agenda, you know, separate from the scientific agenda, and we were out to verify the story and conduct the necessary investigations that were needed to do that. Now the opposition knows about it. In fact, they even started calling our investigators with some very angry comments about it. There's no way to trust. You know, now they're in a position to just sit back, wait for our investigators to surface, and just feed them with disinformation if they wanted to kill, you know, the validity of the story. You follow me?
Yeah. Well, let's get to the phone lines, because
okay,
these folks have been waiting. We're going to go, as a matter of fact, to Dallas, Texas. We've got Glenn joining us on satellite. Glenn, good evening.
Hey, how you doing, Don?
We're doing good.
Good show, as usual.
Well, thank you.
To start this off, I want to tell Vito, if he's not aware of it, there's a NASA publication called The Chronological Catalog of Reported Lunar Events. It's contained in a NASA technical report, R-277, which is from July of 1968. And that article talks about lunar transient phenomena dating back to the year 1540 that they've been keeping track of. I don't know if you were aware of that or not. Let's see. Don, you know, getting ready for this show, I was going over a few articles, and I came across one called The Long Saga of Lunar Anomalies.
Yes.
Written by you.
Yes.
Which it talks about the works of Sylvan, Hoagland, and Cornett, and all of these things correspond, and basically, as far as I can see, say a lot about what Vito's talking about here.
Absolutely. The lunar question, Glenn, has been something that has literally, it's been one of the mainstays of my interest in the overall research field, because the moon is so close to us, but yet it's so far away. But it is one body that we can observe with instruments, i.e. telescopes and what have you. And this has been a pet love of mine for a long time.
As it has with most of us. So I'm going to say one more thing about UFO Magazine before I ask Vito a question I want to ask. You folks out there really need to subscribe to UFO Magazine, because there's some good stuff in here. I'm going to cite a point piece from Vicky in the March and April 95 issue. I'm going to one specific paragraph. It says here, several anomaly theorists were encouraged by their meeting last November with NASA individuals at the Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland. At that meeting, previously unreleased images were shared, some of which appear to confirm much of the current anomaly hypothesis, and some were certain regions were clearly blacked out, according to Mark Whitford, whose relationship to NASA led to the Goddard meeting. He says here, I'm reluctantly coming around to believe that there are artificial structures on the moon, which I'd like his comment on that. And also, I'll go ahead and ask this and get you guys' comments on it. In that June and July issue of the MUFON Sky, Houston Sky, Vito, you talked about a lady named Jane.
Yes.
That did a lot of the transcripts on the NASA missions.
That's right.
I was wondering if you had kept up with this lady, knew who she was, where she is now, and why hasn't she come forward to back you up on this story?
First of all, she doesn't know I wrote the article.
Okay.
And I protected her identity. In the article, you'll notice it says, I don't have permission to use her name, so I'll call her Jane.
Okay.
Okay. I'm actually protecting her identity, and she has no idea I even wrote the article. I have not decided to ask if she wanted to come forward, or if any of the other fellows wanted to come forward, because a lot of people in the company I worked for saw these photos, and were aware of what Lister and I were doing. I wanted to wait until the MUFON investigation was over, because I felt that they would then feel more comfortable, you know, coming forward if they knew we had backup. See what I'm saying?
I do. I know a lot of those folks that you're talking about that were involved in that investigation, and I was sorry to see that it kind of got scuttled the way that it did.
And it's not their fault. They've been doing a great job.
Right.
And you know, well, what can I say? For a group that was working with no budget, on a shoestring.
Absolutely. You know,
part-time effort, after work, weekends, that sort of stuff. The effort they put up against overwhelming odds was one for the books, and I just felt so bad that, you know.
Well, that's why it's so vitally important, and something as important as this, that the individuals involved in researching something like this are aware of what the pitfalls are.
Okay.
And that's been a major problem in the UFO field for many, many years. People have come across something that looks absolutely exciting and sensational, and they just can't wait to spill it all over. And in many cases, unfortunately, it kind of sinks the ship before it gets fully launched. Gentlemen, we're at the bottom of the hour, and we've got to take another break. Glenn, I want to thank you for your call and for that absolutely unsolicited plug for the magazine.
That's a great
of course,
magazine,
Vicki and I feel very strongly about that. But thank you so much, Glenn. Keep those eyes pointed up, and we'll look forward to talking to you again.
All right, bye-bye, Don.
Bye. Okay, with no further ado, Vito, let's start knocking off some of these phone calls, okay? Let's see, we've got Jim calling in by that beautiful city by the bay in San Francisco. Jim, good evening and welcome to the show.
Hi, Don, how are you?
We're fine. That Jim!
Yeah.
You're in San Francisco.
I'm in San Francisco.
What the heck are you doing in San Francisco?
I took Dwight up. He said the Milky Way was great up here and I came up to see. You're right.
Okay, Jim, what's on your mind?
I have some code words I want to ask Vito about, if he had seen any in the transcripts.
Okay.
Did he see any thing called Arnold, which was supposed to be aliens? There was Santa Claus, but there's also an Arnold.
No, I can honestly say I didn't see Arnold. You must remember I had less than 10 or 15 minutes left. And I wasn't really reading. I was going through them as fast as I could, just scanning through, you know, scanning them. I don't remember Arnold. I honestly don't.
Mm-hmm. How about Barbara? Barbara was supposed to be a code word for structures.
I don't recall Barbara.
Like
no.
Barbara is in the valley or stuff like that.
No, I remember dialogue talking about these anomalies or these UFOs, these bogeys, Santa Claus, that sort of thing. I remember debates, not debates, but dialogue on how they were going to position the command module. At one point, they were at an unfortunate incident because they were going to go around the backside of the moon and lose track of this thing. And they were discussing how they would have, well, we'll pick it up on the next pass, that type of thing. And when they got back, it was gone, you know, that sort of thing. But I don't remember words like Arnold or Barbara.
Okay.
All right, Don. On one of the, on that big King Crater photograph I got you?
Yes.
I have a big one like that, or that same size, which is one next to it. And there's a glass, well, not glass, but some kind of crystalline structure that, as the spacecraft is sort of moving left to right in its forward motion,
mm-hmm.
There's a glint of the sun just starting, and then as it's over in the next photograph they took, it's real bright, like the flash is there. It's really interesting, and if it had gone a few... And the part of it, the bottom, was starting to glint.
Absolutely. I have a number of photographs that have some absolutely amazing things on there. You know, Vito, I told you earlier mm-hmm. that in this one photograph of the King Crater region, there are a number of anomalies, including in the upper left part of the photograph. Mm-hmm. And, Jim, I think you'll acknowledge this. There are two structures that appear to be two Quonset-type huts, which have what appear to be two lit windows on each structure. Do you know
exactly
what I'm talking about?
Yes, there is.
And below that, there appears to be And the only way I can describe it is it would have to be a very large, what appear to be antenna array, with an artificial structure beside it that looks, and this sounds weird, I realize it, but like an egg carton with the indentations in it. Did you see that thing, Jim?
Yes, I finally did see that. You're right. We found it a couple of months back.
So
you're right.
There are things in those photographs, ladies and gentlemen, that literally defy description unless somebody was there in the past or perhaps is still there. Jim, we've got to move along, but you enjoy
When I get back into L.A., I'll call you back up.
Absolutely. You enjoy your trip up there to San Francisco.
Okay,
that's a beautiful city.
Have a good holiday.
Thank you, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye. Okay, we're going to go to Simi Valley. We have Mike calling in on Comcast cable. Mike, good evening.
Hi, how you doing, Don?
Just fine. What's on your mind?
Did you watch Alien Autopsy tonight?
No, that was it was on an hour before this show, but I taped it at home.
Yeah, they showed more of the wreckage this time.
Right.
Yeah, I was just wanted to get your opinion on what you think.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're talking about lunar phenomena, Mike, so I'm going to save that for another show when we do another thing on the alien autopsy. Okay?
All right.
Okay, Mike, thanks for your call. We're going to go to Houston. We have Chuck joining us on satellite. Chuck, good evening.
Good evening, Don. And Vito, it's a long way to go to make a local call, but it's great to talk to you.
Where are you?
I'm in Houston.
Oh, great. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
What can I do for you?
Vito, I'm a radio guy, and I started in radio when I was 16 years old back in 66. Mm-hmm. I remember on the news wire, I can't remember if it was AP or UPI, mm-hmm. in 67, there was actually a two-sentence story that crossed the wire,
mm-hmm.
that said lunar orbiter had photographed what appear to be man-made structures,
mm-hmm.
or human-made structures, mm-hmm. in the floor of the Mare Crisium crater.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, my goodness, this is the story of the century. And I waited for a follow-up, an expanded story version of that to cross the wire. It never did.
No, it never did.
Vito, do you get the impression that what you're looking at is like incredibly old artifacts, ancient, or did you have a sense it's new stuff?
A combination of both.
Really?
Some looked like it was very ancient stuff, and some of it looked like new construction was going on. New construction work. It seemed to be some evidence of not flares, but smoke puffs, that sort of thing. Puffs of smoke coming up out of a crater, that type of thing.
Did you see anything, Vito, that resembled structures where individuals would be inhabiting, living, or whatever?
It's hard to say. I do see. We did see things that gave you the impression. Yes, it's kind of like a hut. It's kind of like a dome. I'm not really sure what it was, but it was nothing that was definable as, let's say, a city or a block or that type of thing. Nothing that would stand out as obvious housing. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, it would make sense that if in fact there was a group of sentient beings. Living on the moon, that it would be probably because of radiation and the extremes of heat and cold, it would be underground.
You wouldn't want to be on the surface.
Right.
Some people, Vito, have suggested that NASA was literally scared. Richard Hoagland, for one. It was scared away from the moon by all this stuff.
I believe it, because I remember in the 60s, the fellows from my generation were very aware of what the government was doing because of the Vietnam thing, so we kept an eye on everything that was happening.
Right.
Every announcement, that sort of thing. And in the 60s, I remember there were tremendous plans for the moon. We were going to use the moon as a base, as a stepping stone to
the
stars.
2001 spelled all that out. Sure.
Yeah, we had, they had stuff on the drawing. Even the space shuttle was supposed to be the workhorse that was going to carry supplies to moon bases. That
mm-hmm.
sort of thing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Tools, equipment, that sort of thing. And there were many, many more missions that were planned. And the entire thing just got shut down tighter than a drum.
Well, all the raw material, is on the moon in order to, with the technology, of course, to sustain life up there. Perhaps the only thing that would have to be transported up after a complex was set up would be water. But still, you got to ask yourself, remember back to the early 60s, in 61, when Kennedy stated that we were going to race for the moon, suddenly the aerospace industry literally hit the afterburners. We spent billions of dollars to only go up a half a dozen times and bring back a few hundred pounds of rocks.
Yeah, see, that makes no sense. Something interrupted the program. Something of a very specific nature that they just won't talk about yet forced them to shut that thing down.
Well, you know, there have been rumors for years that we were told, quite frankly, get the hell off the moon. And those were rumors.
I wouldn't be surprised, because I did walk away. We walked away with the... We knew that Leonard had rang the bell on this one, okay?
Well, let me tell you two things that most people are not aware of, okay?
Right.
Number one, were you aware that in 1962, of all people, one of the biggest skeptics today when you mention UFOs is Carl Sagan. Mm-hmm. In 1962, here in Los Angeles, Carl Sagan addressed the American Rocket Association and stated that we better be ready to meet somebody else when we get to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm paraphrasing, but that's what he said.
Yeah, I was not aware of that.
And number two, were you aware that when the astronauts went to the moon in the Apollo mission, mm-hmm. that they were armed? How many people are aware that they took weapons with them?
I didn't know that.
That's true.
I just assumed the whole thing was unarmed, yeah.
No.
I knew that. The reason given was in case they landed in some jungle or godforsaken place, they could defend themselves.
On the moon?
On the moon?
Well, no. When they splashed down, if they got...
Now, I realize that Bill Cooper a few years ago was saying that we had lakes and trees and stuff on the backside of the moon.
No.
But,
No, if, in case they came down in Tahiti or someplace.
Oh, I see. The natives in Tahiti.
Well, whoever. They
Come on, Chuck.
Don, you got my video.
Yes, I did.
Okay, I'll talk to you later.
Okay, Chuck, you take care.
Thank you.
You bet. Okay, Vito, before we take any more phone calls, we got to take another break.
Okay.
God, I wish we could just run straight here, but we got to take those breaks.
Okay.
So stand by when we come back. We're going to take some more phone calls. And incidentally, I have several phone lines are opened up. So if you've been waiting, now's your chance. And we're back. Vito, we're going to go to Indianapolis. We've got Tim joining us on satellite. Tim, good evening.
Good evening, Don. Thanks for letting me on tonight.
You betcha.
Well, my question goes back to what you were talking about just before the commercial. And when NASA had these photographs taken before they even landed astronauts on the moon, why did they even land men on the moon? They must have had a pretty good idea that these astronauts weren't going to get, you know, blown off the surface, but they went ahead and did it anyway. Why do you think that is?
Well, if you're asking me, Tim, I would only say that after such a tremendous amount of monies spent, technologies developed, and even astronauts that died, if you remember, Gus Grissom, White, and Chaffee died in that horrible cockpit fire in 1967 or 68, which almost scuttled, you know, the whole program for a while. How could they have explained stopping, getting off the horse in middle stream, and walking backwards?
Yeah.
I think that by that time, now this is my speculation, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I think that by that time they had no choice but to go ahead. It's kind of like the airline pilot that flies flying across, you know, across the ocean, and there's a certain point that once he crosses that point, you know, he has to go ahead because he doesn't have enough gas to go backwards. So perhaps that's the reason.
Yeah. What about Vito? What do you think?
Yeah, I tend to agree. It would have been too difficult for them to explain why they were stopping. The whole world was waiting for this. There was a 10-year build-up to it. We had mobilized the whole country. There were like umpteen plans on the drawing board for all kinds of things that were supposed to come. And to stop it after the first one would have been, how do they explain it?
Right. Well, it did seem suspicious after just really a few manned missions that Nixon called it all off.
Well, do you realize, Tim, that there was still a mission ready to go that was bought and paid for?
Oh, yeah.
That never lifted off.
Yep. I was a big lunar nut when I was watching all that, and I was just sorely disappointed when that one didn't go off.
And you might remember, too, that during those days, the newspapers and the TV coverage, more and more coverage was being dedicated to the Vietnam thing.
Right.
And that sort of took everybody's attention away from the lunar thing.
That's yes.
Right. See what I mean?
That's right. Well, thank you, gentlemen. I'll let somebody else come on
Tim,
here.
Tim,
so.
thank you for your call. How long have you been listening to the program?
Oh, I've been listening to you for a couple of years now.
Oh, fantastic.
And I've been a subscriber to UFO Tonight for even longer than that. So.
You mean the magazine?
The magazine, yes.
Fantastic.
All right. Thank you.
Keep those eyes pointed up, my friend.
Good night.
Okay, we're going to go to Wanda in Fullerton, who's joining us on Comcast. Wanda, good evening. And incidentally, before Wanda, we take your question, one of our listeners called in and wanted me to repeat the title of the book that we mentioned at the top of the show. That is Someone Else is on the Moon by George H. Leonard. And Somebody Else is on the Moon by George H. Leonard. And believe me, the book, I believe, now is out of print. It hasn't been published in quite a while. You can still find copies around in used bookstores, perhaps your library. I strongly recommend anyone with an interest in this to try to track one down. Wanda, go ahead.
Yeah, a couple questions here. One, I'd like to know, let's say the United States put up those pipes and machines and what have you that are being seen. How could they have gotten up there without us knowing about it?
Well, I don't think they could have. I don't think they could have done it without something like a space shuttle to bring it, which didn't exist yet.
Yeah, you know, I can hardly hear you.
Yeah, what he said, Wanda, was that it would virtually, back in those days, be impossible. We didn't have anything then like the space shuttle. And besides, the size of these artifacts that we're talking about, Vito, some of them were over a mile long, weren't they? And
exactly.
Absolutely huge.
Oh,
very large. Very large, yes.
Okay. The second question, then. What is the smallest telescope that you could use from Earth to see anything up there worthwhile?
I'm not an astronomer, so I honestly can't answer that. I don't have any idea.
Well, Wanda, I personally have an 8-inch Celestron, which is just, you know, ideal for really getting some fine detail. But you can get telescopes with, you know, a lens that's several inches wide, 2 or 3 inches in width, where you can get a pretty good view. But remember, the wider the lens, the more light that you gather and the more that you can see with it.
I see.
But, yeah, you can get one probably. You can get a decent telescope for several hundred dollars that would allow you to see quite a bit.
Well, listen, give one more question.
Sure.
Have you seen anything with your telescope? Have you been able to pull anything in?
Myself?
Yeah, that would be interesting to anybody.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Nothing that I could definitively say I'm positive it's alien, but I have seen some strange things up there, yes.
Oh, I see.
Lights, flickering lights, what appeared to be, I don't know, to me it looked like a small cloud, but I couldn't, you know, I certainly couldn't testify to that.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I have seen some strange things.
Yeah, well, what we need is a little man up there with a red flag, you know.
Yeah, at least, or a flashlight.
Okay, good talking to you.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
We're going to go to Cala Mesa. We have Mike joining us on TCI. Mike, good evening.
Hello, sir.
Hi, how are you?
Real fine. I just had a couple questions about the Area 51. When we be going to make comments about that again?
Well, I would imagine we're going to be doing a show on that area right around the first of the year.
Okay, because me and my girlfriend saw something here down in San Bernardino, and I can't explain it, but I'm very interested in all of this.
Just recently?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, Mike, that certainly sounds interesting. I would love to talk to you about it.
Okay. I will
keep listening to the show.
Thank you.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
We're going to go to Eric in Redondo Beach, California, who is joining us on Century Cable. Eric, good evening. Are you there? Hello? Well, evidently he's not. Vito, we have about six... Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. We have about 6 minutes before the show ends.
Okay.
Do you still feel uncomfortable talking about this?
No, I don't feel uncomfortable, because after so many years, and I've seen so many other people come forward with so many other information, that I don't feel uncomfortable. I do think, I would have been happier if we would have been in a position to verify a lot more of it with the investigation. And one of the reasons I wanted to come on your show was to sort of ask your help or enlist your aid in helping us track down Lester House.
Yes, that's something I wanted to ask you about, because I knew that you wanted to put out a call if Lester, for example, might be in the listening audience, or if somebody might know how to contact him. You lost contact with him, obviously.
Yeah, he was. He liked to work overseas and travel a lot, take the tax benefits that go with working overseas, that sort of thing. But I don't know if he might be retired and maybe back in the States. I know he was a proud papa in '79, because his daughter had just been accepted as a student at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island. And I was hoping some of your listeners in that particular area might be able to track down that lead for us and maybe get the home address or the proper spelling of the last name.
What was his daughter's name?
I don't know the first name. I honestly don't know her first name. But there couldn't have been too many ladies named Howes who were going in as freshmen in 1979.
Now, how do you spell that?
I always spelled it Howes. But other people have pointed out that there's many other possible spellings, such as Howes, Haus, that sort of thing. It depends on how your ear picks up the word Howes, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Lester Howes. But I would certainly love to find Lester. And if there's anybody in your listening audience who has any interest in jumping in and giving us a hand, I would certainly appreciate it.
Sure, and how would they go about contacting you?
Well, there's three ways. I've got a line here, a dedicated line, at area code 713-568-3055. I've got a fax line at area code 713-564-0508.
That's your fax number?
That's a fax number, right.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a mailing address, 10910. West Belford, that's Bellford, box number 336 in Houston, 77099. Any of those three would be...
Why don't you give that again?
Okay, the address is 10910 West Belford, Bellford, and box number 336, Houston, Texas, 77099. And I would appreciate any and all information we could track down on Lester or the family or, where he is today. Because I would like him to get on board with this and he can verify, everything we did. Plus, he's got the pictures.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, have you been following the controversial story on this alien autopsy thing?
Very briefly.
Okay, the reason I ask is because Representative Steve Schiff, from New Mexico, who, as a matter of fact, was a guest on this program a number of months ago. Representative Schiff expressed an interest in this field. He was trying to get to the bottom of what transpired in Roswell, New Mexico, almost 50 years ago.
Right.
And I would think that this story that you relate about NASA would be of particular interest to our nation's lawmakers. A bureaucracy, any government bureaucracy, supposedly is supposed to be working for the public, and it really sounded, the story you told us tonight just, I think, goes beyond the pale, Vito.
We're out of time. Thanks very much. Hope you enjoyed this edition of Don Ecker Live.
Hello?
Yeah, that was Larry King telling us we're out of time.
Okay, I didn't know what that was.
Yeah, we still have roughly 1 minute. Have you thought about contacting any of these representatives, especially in Texas?
No, I haven't, but I guess it probably ought to be a good idea to look into. Why not?
Well, that's what the heck they're there for, so they tell me, Vito. Well, look, I've got to thank you so much. This has been an absolutely fascinating 2 hours.
Well, I want to thank you for having me. I appreciate your offer to have me on the show, and I really enjoyed it.
Well, we definitely are going to do a follow-up program on this, Vito.
Good.
You and I will be in touch probably within the next week. Once again, thanks so much. Fantastic program.
Thank you.
Keep those eyes pointed up, Vito.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye.